Remain seated. My name's Grass, I'm an alcoholic. I should rephrase that. I said, my name's Grass, and we are alcoholic. I got all kinds of people up here. I envy schizophrenics because there's only two. By God's grace, and rooms full of people like you, lots of great sponsorship, lots of speaker cassette tapes, retreats, conferences, etc. You know the drill. I have not had any alcohol, mood-altering drugs, or funny cigarettes since February the 10th, 1986. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. You should clap. You've done a really good job for what I brought to you 36 years ago. Oh, by the way, you know when they walk up here? I got 36 years and 6 days. Just had to throw that out. Somebody wants to get a moment from our sponsor. I drink well. This 34 years ago, I was in this room. They used to have once a month speaker meeting, Saturday night. Everybody faced that way, and the speaker podium was right where what's-his-name is sitting over their elbow on the table. And I flew this speaker in from Oceanside. He's my mentor. His name's Cliff Rhodes. He's a crazy, crazy son of a bitch. Anyway, when I talked to him on, I even, you know, spared no expense. We sent an airplane down to pick him up and bring him up here. He brought his own pilot just in case the pilot had a problem. Anyway, he's here, and anybody know Bubba over in Tulare? Bubba was a featured warm-up speaker, and he kept saying grass this and grass that and, you know, all that grass shit. And he sits down, and Cliff comes to the podium and looks over at me and says, I didn't know your name was Grass. Grass used to be my sponsor, too. That guy could think on his feet like that his entire life in sobriety. He was my mentor for years. We had him here once, and we had him out at Ritchie Barn at least 4 times. And it was really always good to have. I really miss him, and there were so many people at his funeral. The church only held like 450, and there was probably 1,000 outside, and I knew I wouldn't be able to get in. But we got to go back to all God's time. I come from a fine Christian home. I think it's an improper place to raise children because you got to be perfect in every way. Anybody identify? We're getting ready to come into a season of Catholicism called, it's for 40 days, it's called Lent. What happens to men that are Catholics in Lent? They give up booze for 40 days to prove to the plaintiff, I mean their wife, that they can go without booze. But you know what the alcoholic mind does. It wants to focus on that Easter Sunday, or actually Easter evening Sunday and the rest of the week. It's called ketchup. Anyway, going through all the growing up of a fine Christian home, raised by the nuns. Yes, we got bitch slapped back in the days. And they knew how to take one of those wooden rulers and slap you in the palm of the hand, and it would hurt. And in the fourth grade, I remember, distinctly remember, Sister Lillian, she's only this tall, you could put a beer on her head. She was that short. She threw Doug Costa into the blackboard, bounced him off the blackboard onto the floor, and I went, damn. There's a lot of jokes to go with nuns. We're going to bypass a bunch of that because we don't have enough time. Let's get through grammar school. I started thinking weird in the sixth grade. They used to have a day. Altar boy. Anybody ever been altar boys? I was an altar boy from fourth grade. I was a junior in high school. That's another story. We'll get into it. But I started thinking about once a year, all the altar boys got a free day to go to Fresno to go to this seminary. where you become a Catholic priest. It was a Jesuit seminary. Anybody knows the Jesuits? They are very sophisticated academe. They are what we call teaching priests. They're the Marine Corps of the Catholic Church. Trust me. I was with them for 3 years. Anyway, I decided I was going to be a priest. And once you have your... One of the reasons I found out later, you know how much you find out later when you get sober. I became a priest to please my parents because they thought it was so neat. But when I decided towards the end of the third year, it's a tough outfit up there. It's a 9-period day, no electives, no PE. 3 periods of Latin a day. Yada, yada. I mean, it's tough. You know your universities with the Jesuits. We have Bellarmine, Loyola, Santa Clara. You ever heard of those? They're hoity-toity, high dollar. High dollar. They're the money. They got all the money in Rome. They really do. I digress. My parents came out. We spent a whole day to talk my way out of the seminary. I finally got out of there and came home. Came home to Mount Whitney High School for the first year of my entire life in public school. Now, all of the grammar school parochial people were the ones that were the problem people in Mount Whitney High School. They were all always in the dean's office, etc. So I had a really good crowd to start with. First thing I learned was Friday night. I came to go out with these guys on Friday night. I sit in the back seat, had to fold my legs up in the middle. They drank all these tall cans. We used to drag Maine, if I say it, used to be a two-way street. And you drove one end to the other. There used to be Navy gas at the end of the street where you turned around down there to come back. The bathroom of Navy gas can handle about 6 guys taking a whiz at the same time and then back on down the street. And I learned what Friday night was all about. I had to learn to drink this reindeer beer, night train, some Ripple and some Boone's Farm. These are all throw-up drinks. You know what a throw-up drink is? That's the one drink you don't want to drink. It's a throw-up drink. I became a professional puker. I could lay on my back and puke straight up and not have any land on my face, and I was proud of it. The puking backed off after a doctor friend of mine taught me how to drink alcohol. He says, drink expensive alcohol. It has less fusel oil. Fusel oil in cheap booze like Kessler's, etc., is what gives you hangover. It makes you really dehydrated. Notice how much water you have to drink the next morning. Oh, God. My wife hasn't had a hangover since I got sober. Can you believe that? I mean, that's a miracle in itself. She's a weenie drinker. She has a double martini. Women know what a Cosmo is. She drinks a double Cosmo after teaching school. She comes home. She goes in the kitchen. She lays all this. She's got 3 chrome shakers, small, medium, and large. And when she mixes her drink, she's got a jigger and does this. Can you get the picture? Why not just take the top off and drink it? Oh, she buys everything in 175 and sips her drinks. Now, that formula doesn't work. Anyway, the best thing that I can bring tonight is we had this ritual. Oh, probably 2 years after I was sober, she asked if she could start having wine because she didn't drink. She just didn't. All of a sudden, she says, can I drink wine? I said, no problem. Go right ahead. So she didn't drink wine. She started making Cosmo. That's a double martini for you don't know. It's a double. You know, it's on a stem. It's for females. Pinky finger. She will go sit in her command chair in front of the news. We're going to watch Tucker Carlson. And she goes, cheers. And I got the loser chair. It's the one in the corner over there. And she will turn and go, cheers. I go, cheers to you too, bitch. Oh, shit. We got past it. It didn't really cause anything because the God of my understanding has the enthusiasm and humor that he can do bank shots just to show off. And you get to see him when you watch certain people, when the light finally comes on and they get it. Oh, God. You need to slaughter 100 bulls just in honor of that for some reason. But that part of her having that weenie gene, I got to get off of that. Let's get out of seminary, go into Marine Corps when I was at COS, got back out of the Marine Corps. Marine Corps drinks, folks. Got in the only big fight I've ever been in Oceanside. That's down south, you know, by Camp Pendleton. But I'm smart enough to get out the back before the P's showed up. That was a fight where they actually broke chairs and, you know, broke a lot of shit. It was the only fight I was only an instigator in it. The funny part of that is I get out and I go back to Fresno State and I'm there about three and a half years, and a friend of mine and I decided we're going to start the first biological release program in agriculture crops here in the valley. We started with 1,200 acres. So that's where I started, because I've always worked for myself. That's key later on. So I'm growing up with all these farmers. I love farmers. Farmers drink. We signed all our contracts at Behar's Bar is the main watering hole, Larry. And my other, I used to have $500 a month bar tab at Behar's, Vintage Press. You know what VP is. That's for these people. And the wagon wheel, $1,500 a month, because I could sign my checks because I paid my own bills. So I go through life raising two kids, became a pilot because we needed to fly. We had so many acres. That's another part. We missed going to a funeral today because our flight got canceled to go to Tahoe. Where am I? Oh, I gotta get to the moment of resistance. I'm drinking my way through all the things that happen in life. Weddings and funerals. What do the Germans and Irish call the party after a funeral? They call it a wake. And they have a word for it. And they get FUBAR, for those who don't know what that is, talk to me afterwards or see your sponsor. Because that's shit-faced, right? My dad was a super drinker. But he was a functioning drunk. He kept all the cattle alive. We had a cattle ranch about 2.5 beers west of Tuscany up there, Corsico. And it's actually 2.5 beers. I had to measure it many times. We used to go to cattle ranch with a bunch of us and some friends of mine from Salinas Valley. Why is that pertinent? Because where we used to go get screwed up all the time, because we would lock ourselves inside the ranch for 2 days and 2 nights, supposedly fixing fence, and we had all kinds of automatic weapons. It's a wonder somebody ever got shot, but I love guns. If anybody wants to talk to any of my friends, March the 19th is called Guns and Tri-Tip. What do you think that entails? We're going to blow the shit out of our ship. Going through all that during those days, younger brother Roger was a CHP for 5 years. Why would I bring that up? Well, while we were always drunk up at the cattle ranch, we would practice, what's it called?
Field sobriety.
Field sobriety. We knew all four of the basic field sobrieties drunk ahead of time. And the reason I bring that up, because I was pulled over 22, 23 times during my career, 25 years in a row. I never took a liver break and never quit for Lent. That's bullshit. This particular night is the night before starting a farm show. You know, we just had a farm show here. Each year on Tuesday, I get to celebrate really my first day of sobriety. Because I was drunk at 10 o'clock at Behar's, local watering hole. And I did something stupid. I drove Melvin Hickman's Corvette down to Page, around the back behind the lumber yard, brought it back in and parked it. And came back inside and went, man, that's somebody's rounds. And my brain talked to me. Has your brain ever talked to you? And it said, I need to do that again. Should have left well enough alone, right? So while I'm getting keys back from Melvin, no problem, this big tall dude named Sam turns to me and says, can I go with you? And I said, sure, come on. I didn't know his family had been responsible for murdering two people on the west side of Tulare that they never caught. I found out later. But anyway, we take off. That brand new 86 Corvette running like a sunbitch. I went right straight south of Ahars. And before I get to the stop sign across the tracks, I got this Christmas tree following me, red, blue, and yellow. And I parked Melvin's Corvette right straight on top of the tracks, left the doors wide open. Now, I'm going to turn around and go back and take care of this. Rookie cop doesn't know who I am. I tried to tell him, I'm going to have your goddamn badge. You know what I'm talking about. I'm general manager of the universe, dude. I won't even sign your court card. No. I'm negotiating. Remember? What's step three? Negotiations. No. The third step in denial. Negotiations. I'm negotiating with this rookie cop, and you know when you've done a decent job, right? You know if you passed or not. I knew I passed it. I did them all, and I looked him in the face because I saw a question mark. Have you ever looked at somebody and see a question mark on their face? I saw a big question mark on his face that I had never seen before because I've had two CHP sheriffs. I don't care because I have a silver tongue. Got it? Do I need to explain that? No. I can. The shrink of records said I had. I could rationalize myself out of a wet paper bag, or justify and rationalize. So, at that time, at that night, for the past 3 years, the plaintiff and I are having marriage counseling with this shrink of records. Him and her against me. I got to talk about that ahead of time so everything else makes sense. Because that was the dividing line in my life. Right there. First day of farm show. We used to go to my, and I used to, ever heard of the Marco Polo? I'd always go to the Marco Polo, had two double scotch on the rocks 20 minutes beforehand because I didn't want to go in there without some bracer because I'm going to have to sit there, him and her against me. I hated his guts. See, what I was doing, I was, you know, I had a plan. You always have to have a plan, right? I had a plan that I'm going to bulldoze her, push her to filing for divorce. All my friends get a divorce, so it's no big deal, right? Everybody I know has to get the divorce some three or four times. They don't even get it right. So I'm going to push her to file for divorce. That was where I was headed. Believe me, God had other plans. This cop turns to me and says something really stupid. Mr. Grassel, would you please turn around and put your hands behind your back? See, if I was handcuffed that night like this, we wouldn't be talking. But he handcuffed me. I'm going to go through this. Handcuffed me like this and put in the back seat of that car. Now, I have to wrap my legs up like pretzels to sit back there, and I'm sitting with Sam. And I'm, you know what fidgeting is? I'm fidgeting in the seat. This is not supposed to happen to a decent person, a nice guy. Jesus Christ, man. He goes, is this your first one? I said, yeah, it's going to be my last. And he goes, whoa, dude, I'm from the 502 days. I got a license plate on a half-ton pickup. Says 502 day. That was the old penal code. Police officers used to bring in a deuce because they used the two to call it a deuce. You with me there? It's a deuce. And the new penal code has a two on the end of a two, but it's got that many numbers. But he says, you're not in trouble. Back in the 502 days, you weren't in trouble until you got your third DUI. So he's trying to lecture me in the back seat about I should chill out. So I'm in jail, the old Tulare police jail, which has metal doors that go clang. And I heard the clang. And they got a toilet in each one of them. They put me here, and they put Sam over there. They kept him away from me. And I tried to deal with this mentally that I'm going to beat this. Because when they had me sign all that stuff, they made me take my glasses off, and they made me sign a bunch of papers with my glasses off. So my brain said, I know a few attorneys, still do. God, you need attorneys when you need them. I swear. Anyway, the only reason I'm going through it is this was the scene of the crime of my life right here, and I got to go through it last Thursday night with Big Elliot. God, we had a mob out there. It was very disruptive. I get into jail, and I ran with that, I'm going to beat this, for about 45 minutes. Then my brain talked to me. I remember going over to the toilet, and we're going to talk about toilet for a bunch of things in a minute. I got there to the toilet, and I looked up, and I did the first three steps, never saw your book. Never knew or Clem and Martha and Bill Bogerals and 1-2, you know, from Farmersville or whatever. I never knew any of that. And basically I said, I know the jig's up. I know I can't drink anymore. And I know you're the boss. And I made a decision right there that tomorrow morning I'm going to call the shrink of record. Why would I want to call that son of a bitch? Anybody but Mike Schaefer. He never pointed me for 3 years. $65 an hour out of pocket for 3 years, and he knew. So, call him on the phone after I fired the cannon and started. I had a hangover and bad headache. Oh, shit, I met the plaintiff at the back door at 6 o'clock in the morning in her bathrobe. She comes out, because I always come home, okay? I always come home. I didn't come home that night. Where you been, David M? I said, I got busted last night. Now then, she just turned and walked away, and we got a little walkway inside where the two-station barroom is. I still got a big bar. And she's walking down a walkway to the kitchen with what we call that pre-Al-Anon kick. You know what it is? You ever go to an Al-Anon meeting? This is my third time in Al-Anon. I love Al-Anon. Anyway, I heard every word she didn't say. Now, most people don't go through this. I only know my son, the freckled redhead that got sober at 22. Don't quit because you puke a little, Brian, for God's sake. Jeez. Wait, you're 33 or 43. I was 43. So, lost my track. Where was I? She didn't say. Oh, went and fired the cannon. Got back in the truck, called Mike Schaefer, said, I need to see you. He says, come next Monday, 7 days, 6 days later, 1:30. I says, the hell with you. I need to see you today. He says, I got a 30-minute lunch break. Come and see me. Wow. But I didn't go to Marco Polo before I went there. And this time he didn't take us in the room we're normally in. I'd like to thump that. Just kidding. Where am I? Well, Mike Schaefer, into his office, but we go into his private office. And I'm telling you, he's got an extremely wide desk there. That's very important. I'm sitting on one side of the wide desk. He's on the other. And I sit down, and he looks me in the face and goes, what up, grasshole? Just like that. With a chicken shit grin on his face. And I'm like, He says, what's up? I says, I got busted last night. Long pause. I can still remember the pause. Then he says, what you going to do about it, asshole? I remember doing this. I don't think I can drink anymore. I'm doing it right straight to his chicken shit face. I can't drink anymore. I probably need some counseling. Probably need to go to A&A or whatever that is. And I might even need to go to a treatment center. A treatment center? He The next thing out of his mouth was like pouring honey over my forehead. David, I don't think you need to go to a treatment center, but you got two of them right. So he gets the sticky notes out. That's really critical with a few people nowadays. 3x3 sticky notes. He put Claude Rutherford. He was Captain AA at Tulare County at the time. He had his phone number down, and he put that sticky note, and he reached over to the far side in front of me, puts it there, and then he puts Danielle Carson's phone number down. She was my counselor lady. She was the heroin queen of the San Joaquin. Oh, God. She's only this tall. I always have to call her witch to keep it cleaned up a little bit. You put a beer on her head. Oh, she insulted me twice a week all the time. Oh, bad. I'll get there in a second. So, the orders were, these are suggestions called subtle command? He reached over. Now, I got my tie on here, right? He reached over like this and put his two index fingers on those two sticky notes, reached over, and looks me in the face and says, if you do what these two people tell you to do, you don't ever have to come back to my office again. And my brain said, why, you son of a bitch. $65 an hour, no insurance, out of pocket, 3 years. What's my next question? Why didn't you tell me? Me trying to tell you? I can't tell you shit. Well, the feeling that I got after I walked out of his office to walk down to the parking lot there, I remember all this vividly, even more of it. There's two steps to go down, you know, the parking lot. And I stopped on those top steps, set my ass down, and put my elbows on my knees, on my chin, and I said, you know what? I believe I'm going to be okay. I actually said it. And that's been my experience for 36 and 6 days. Don't drink and don't die is what you got to do nowadays, because everybody's dying like flies. We have a progressive terminal disease. Always gets worse, never gets better. So now I'm going to go to Farmersville, which is Tweakerville. Oh, I digress. How many tweakers we got in this room? A show of hands. Got to welcome all the tweakers. All you got to do is catch alcoholism. We'd love to have you. It's a communicable disease. We'd love to give it to you. How do you think we give you a communicable disease? Everybody know what malaria is? Anybody not know malaria? You can't get malaria off a toilet seat, right? How do you get malaria? A mosquito. To be specific, I'm an entomologist. It's an Anopheles mosquito. It's the only way you can catch malaria. So that's called the mode of transmission. So if I'm comparing alcoholism to malaria, where's the mode of transmission of catching alcoholism? Because we'd love to give it to you. It's the best disease to catch because there's treatment for it. Well, the mode of transmission is in the ears. You got a lot of wax that you go to meetings and it goes in one ear and out the other. These bozo-ass boring meetings, that's what I used to call them because everybody had lost everything. I couldn't identify. I was a heavy beer drinker. I'm not an alcoholic. Come on. I'm a nice guy. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Chris, is there no end to your goodness? I stare in the mirror. No, that's a joke. I digress. I lost my track. Oh, okay. It goes in one ear and out the other. And certain shit starts to stick. And then when you go to enough meetings, keep coming back. Why do they keep saying keep coming back? That kind of infers going out into the revolving doors of AA. How many people go in and out? Keep coming back. Why don't you just stay? That's a little bit derogatory. But the disease of alcoholism is caught in these boring-ass rooms where you all of a sudden, everybody talks this spiritual guru shit, and you kind of want to get spiritual, and you're kind of envious of somebody that you know has got it somewhere, and then sometimes you lose it. A lot of times you have to relight your candle during the day, because if it goes out, you're in trouble. The spiritual aspect is a big point in AA. So if you can't catch the spiritual aspect, that's the biggest point of staying sober. I rest my case, right? So that means that's where you're headed down the road. Everything is going to be in a spiritual context, not religious. If God will run you off, whiskey will get your rusty ass back in here. When I first heard that, I thought that was really cool. The one I want put on my epitaph is, be where you say you're going to be, do what you say you're going to do, and you could stay sober. In a short sentence like that, kind of like, trust God, clean house, and help others. You know, we're always trying to simplify things. This thing that we call alcoholism, I got a two-station wet bar at my house for 45 people with air conditioner on top that will keep it cool at 113 degrees. Two-station means I got two bartenders behind a stainless. I got used to own a bar, gave me the whole back stainless back bar. Now it's full of all my wife's shit. But I still got probably at least three times more booze back there than I had when I quit. What's the point of that is, when you realize, it usually takes a while, you got to get past pink cloud day. Once you realize that alcohol is not the culprit, once you realize that, the whole world changes. We got a really good friend that's a super bartender out at the golf course. There are people in Fresno that can't believe how much he is. He's 4 years sober. You know what I'm talking about. He's really big. He looks like he's related to Jack, right? Big Elliot and Jack could be brothers, right? DNA, right? This alcoholism is a progressive terminal disease, and it can be arrested, put in remission for as long as you want. I got a graph. You want to see it afterwards, because I've really expanded a triangle graph about what happens to people that are 3 years sober and go back out versus 18 years and go back out. It explains it, because I always have to have a graph. I can't talk up here without Mike Schaefer or duct tape my hands one day just to prove a point. He says, you can't talk unless if I duct tape your hand. Fuck you, Mike. Sorry. Ooh, shit. Take that off the table. Supposed to be responsible. Where was I? Oh, the graph. Yes. Okay. Here's progression. You got any argument with progression? It gets worse by going up, okay? And if you get sober right here on a certain date, you put an X on the progression, and you put a flat line over here, what do you think the flat line is? That's remission. You're not cured, you're remission. You can get well, but you're not cured. We don't have to argue about that. So here's remission. So if I'm sober 3 years out here, and I go back out, I go directly straight up to where my disease has progressed. Everybody says, you go back to here. I'm like, oh, no. You go up here. And I can really make my point, because to get back into rooms after going out after 3 years is kind of just, you don't have to eat as much crow, right? That's hard to do. But I knew of a woman, 22 years sober, San Fernando Valley. That's clear over here, friends. The triangle's clear up here. And she went back out with 22 years. She didn't go here. She went right straight to there. She started drinking at 10:30 in the morning, was dead at 4:30 that afternoon. Well, it killed her. Quick. Say again. Exactly. Would you be part of my staff? When you lose your tolerance, I don't care what it is. She thought she could drink this much alcoholically, and it killed her. Started at 10:30 in the morning, dead at 4:30. Now, we got all kinds of stories that aren't that as... make the point as well as that does. But I have taken that graph to make all kinds of other adjustments to it. Way off course. One of my 2 or 3 years sober, and Pat Stulon calls me up and says, her son, it's a farmer friend, and her son has a girlfriend on one of the ranches, double wide, got a kid, got a kite stuck up on a service drop, anybody in electrical business, a service drop to a 55-horse pump. That's a lot of amps, volts, etc. Got it? So he's up there on a ladder trying to get that kite off of that high amperage volts coming off of there. It burnt this much of his arm off right there and put him in the hospital. He still got his stuff. He's still sober. Jerry Zinger, a pilot, died, and he was here for his funeral out at the airport, and I got to talk to him. Oh, God. So I got to, since I had friends, Citation jet, we load him in, we fly to Bedford. That's the only place I knew to go. I just called him up and said, hey, I got somebody I got to bring down here. Okay, bring cash. Anyway, I get Ritchie down there, but we took him in a Citation jet. We're cool now. We're not going down there in a Suburban. We're going to take a Citation jet him down there. And I took two more farmers' kids to Betty Ford Center in about a 3 to 4 month period. Now, I'm just winging it. I thought, this is what we should do this the night before so that we can sit and have a conversation. It's going to be a tight conversation, right? Very confronting. And we're going to get through that, and we're going to handcuff them, load them up, and go. Can you do that? Hell yes. Been doing it for the last 34 years. Anyway, after I got three of these down there, I get a phone call one day from the PR guy at Eddie Ford Center. His name's Mark Greenberg. Here's how the call goes. Mr. Grassall, this is Mark Greenberg. I'm the PR guy at Eddie Ford Center. It's come to our attention that you and I need to have a conversation. So the next time you do a drop-off down here, I'd like for you to come to my office. We need to talk. The mind says, I'm being called to the principal's office. I thought I was doing pretty good. What are they going to do to me? Shut me down? So I get down there to talk to Mark, and he says, we want to send you all across the United States. Are you up for it? I said, hell yes, I'm up for it. I've never seen the United States. True story. For 16 years, I went to all four corners of the United States just because they call me and send me there. Now, I work with another place, but Betty Ford Center put me at one time, the alumni dinner, Tulare County had the largest alumni gathering of people in the room across the United States. And that was a big deal. It was kind of one of my, what do you call it? It made my chest kind of stick out a little bit. Oh, my wife used to get pissed because we always got to sit next to Betty Ford's husband, Gerald Ford. Anybody know who that is? The President of the United States. Because I always dressed in a suit, dark suit, and people would come up to me and ask me if they could speak to the president, and I'd always just tell them no. My wife would get pissed. You can't be telling them that. I just love screwing with people, so I got to do that every year. I can tell you one thing. Gerald Ford has got an extremely dry sense of humor. I've had sandwiches with him at the golf course, etc. I got a picture in a man cave. Yes, I do have a man cave. It's got rats. And in the man cave, there's a picture of the plaintiff and I and Gerald Ford. And at the bottom, all I really wanted was a picture of Elizabeth R. Ford. I really liked her, of what she set up there, because in its day, it was what we call a class act. What's a class act? That is the maintenance program on the backside of Disneyland that works on all the locomotives and the submarines. You can eat off the floor in those shops. I've been back there. And it's a class act that you can take your children through, usually. But now it's kind of shaky. But that outfit down there, in its day, in its time, it was a class act. And they sent me, oh, God, I've done hookers, United States senators. I did a country western singer that used to sing with Gene Autry in Madison Square Garden. And I had to wheelchair that son of a bitch from Reading, Pennsylvania to the airport, spend a night with him, almost lost him in the Holiday Express Hotel in down LAX before we're going to fly out and settle to Palm Springs. He went into a seizure. No shit? Yeah. He went into a seizure that morning. And he's... And I knew what was wrong, and I got one of the maids to keep his tongue from going down, keep him upright, don't let him choke on his tongue. I went out the door, down the elevator, out to La Cienega Boulevard. Thank God I can run. And I ran underneath the overpasses down to Habib's liquor store. You know what I'm talking about, Habib. He's got bars all over the liquor store. He's closed. And I banged on the door, took a $50 bill, slid it underneath. I said, I need a fifth of Beefeater's gin now. He just sucked up the $50 bill and gave me a brown paper bag. And I can still remember running back down La Cienega Boulevard. And all the homeless that were underneath those overpasses started chasing me. All because they saw that brown paper bag come out of that liquor store. Anyway, I got up there. I poured a fifth down that guy in three parts, probably in, 25 minutes? And I had to dress him, put his cowboy boots on, put his bandana on his cowboy hat. The reason I'm talking about it, just this was a really neat guy. I got to know him in bed that night. We had to sleep. We had to sleep in the same bed because that's all we had with one big king size. I go, no problem. Paul Harvey, the rest of the story, used to come out in one of those tight, quiet situations. But I get him. The bad part about it, 2 weeks after he got out of Betty Ford Center, his wife calls me from Reading, Pennsylvania. She says, David, the buck is dead. I said, what the hell happened? Well, he went and bought a brand new red boat convertible Cadillac. Remember the old Eldorado? It was a boat. The hood was about 19 foot long. Well, he was at a CVS pharmacy driving out, hit a truck, killed him right there. That was my first death from alcohol, you know, from doing all this international or interstate stuff. Is that 20 till or is that straight up?
Straight up.
Oh, shit. I got lots more shit for you. Real fast. We got to close. We always close on third edition, 436, Me and Alcoholic. I think, a book, they call it Big, and this is a big book. That's why they call it that. See, 436 is me, and for your fourth edition is 386, Me and Alcoholic. This is it's only six lines. Sister Maurice gave this to us with Jody and all of us probably 18, 20 years ago in San Fernando Valley. Here I found an ingredient that had been lacking in any other effort I had made to save myself. Here I found what? Power. Here was power to live to the end of any given day, power to have the courage to face the next day, power to have friends, some, power to help people, and power to be sane, and power to stay sober. I rest my case. Thank you.
Thank you.